Persecution intensifies. Opposition continued. A radio broadcast proclaimed that Jehovah's Witnesses were not good people and were extremists. By March 1986, arrest had become common throughout the country. Among those arrested was Augustin Marais, who, because of his Christian neutrality, had been dismissed from his position as Director General for the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education. He was attacked by the newspapers and even more so on the radio. Other brothers and sisters, even pregnant sisters with small children, were arrested throughout the country. Toward the end of 1986, they were transferred to the central prison in Kigali to await trial. Because the brothers did not sing patriotic songs, did not wear the badge of the president, and did not buy the political party card, people wrongfully concluded that Jehovah's Witnesses opposed the government and were attempting to overthrow it. Focus Hakuzumwami recalls with a cheerful smile, "Brothers from the congregation in Nyabasindu were some of the first to be arrested. Since the rest of us expected to be arrested sooner or later, we realized that our territory assignment was about to be changed from outside the prison to inside it. So we decided to carry out an extensive preaching campaign in our outside territory first. We went to the market areas and placed many magazines and books. We prayed to Jehovah to help us cover our territory before we were imprisoned. Jehovah helped us, for we finished our territory on October 1, 1985. We were imprisoned 7 days later." The following year, Palatin Nsanzawimo and his wife Fatuma were arrested by the state security agents. After an interrogation of 8 hours and an extensive search of their house, they were taken to prison along with their 3 children. On the way to prison, Palatin's younger brother, following close behind, took charge of their 5-year-old son and 4-year-old daughter. Palatin and Fatuma were imprisoned together with their 14-month-old baby. Fatuma was later transferred to another prison and was not released for 9 months. At that time, Jean Chitea's 4 children were expelled from school. A little later, on returning home, he found that his house had been ransacked and his wife arrested, leaving the children alone in the house. Shortly thereafter, Brother Chitea himself was arrested and put in prison in Butare, joining his wife and other brothers. Thereafter, all the prisoners in Butare were transferred to the central prison in Kigali. In the meantime, Brother Chitea's children were cared for by brothers in Kigali. Brother Chitea recalls, "As the brothers and sisters were brought in from prisons in other regions to the central prison in Kigali, they would greet one another with joy, saying, 'Komera,' which means 'take courage.' When one of the prison guards heard this greeting, he retorted, 'You people are mad. How can people take courage in prison?'" In spite of those arrests, honest-hearted people were not discouraged, and the persecution often brought positive results. Odette Mukandakezi, an energetic, outgoing sister, was among the many who were arrested at that time. She relates, "During the time of persecution, brothers were arrested and beaten. One day, we passed a little girl named Josephine who was herding cattle. She had a Bible and had read in it that the early Christians were maligned, persecuted, scourged, and imprisoned. Since she knew that the witnesses were being persecuted, she concluded that they must have the true religion, and she requested a Bible study. She is now a baptized sister." During the ban, Gaspar Nyangera was working as a truck driver, and his work often took him to Nairobi, Kenya. He smuggled publications back to Rwanda in a special box fitted to his truck. The box could hold 6 cartons of literature. At that same time, Henry Sinyonga from Western Uganda regularly brought magazines across the border on his motorbike. Congregation meetings had to be held in small groups. If the authorities suspected that Jehovah's Witnesses were holding meetings, they would make a search. Brother Nyangera recalls, "I had an annex built into my house where we could hold meetings secretly. We buried our literature in plastic sacks in the ground and covered them with charcoal." As the wave of arrest started, Jean-Marie Mutezintare, who was newly baptized at the time, managed to attend the Special International Integrity Keepers Convention in Nairobi in December 1985. On his return, he and Isai Sibumana collected magazines from the brothers in western Uganda on their way to Rwanda. At the border, officials found the magazines, arrested and handcuffed the brothers, and led them off to interrogation and a cold night in a jail cell. Soon, the brothers found themselves in the central prison in Kigali. There they met about 140 imprisoned brothers and sisters who were delighted to hear a first-hand report of the convention in Nairobi. Certainly, what they had to tell was encouraging, and it helped to fortify the brothers. The imprisoned brothers held meetings and arranged for organized preaching activity. Apart from preaching, they also taught some prisoners to read and write. Further, they conducted Bible studies with interested people and helped prepare many new publishers for baptism. Some of them had been studying when they were arrested, and others had learned the truth in prison. A circuit overseer visits prison. One of the brothers describes events in the Kigali prison in 1986. Many brothers were there. We held a meeting to see how we could help the brothers on the outside. We decided to write them a letter to encourage them. We told them that when we finished our preaching territory in prison, we would come back home. We preached from bed to bed and conducted Bible studies. Later, when we heard that a circuit overseer was visiting the congregations outside, we too wanted a visit, so we made it a matter of prayer to Jehovah. Soon after that, Brother Uwakabubu, who was the circuit overseer, was in prison for the second time. As far as we were concerned, it was so that he could visit us. During the persecution, only one brother compromised. When he put on the political badge, the non-witness prisoners beat, kicked, and insulted him, calling him a coward. His wife, who was studying the Bible, asked him why he had not remained faithful. He later wrote a letter to the judges telling them that he had made a mistake and was still one of Jehovah's Witnesses. He even wrote to the branch office in Kenya to apologize. He is now serving Jehovah faithfully once again. Preaching continues outside. Those who had not been arrested continued preaching with undiminished zeal, averaging about 20 hours a month. Alfred Simali, who was one of those still outside prison, recalls, "Although I was never imprisoned, I expected to be and prepared for it. The Kingdom Hall was closed, so we met in small groups and continued preaching. I would put my magazines in a khaki envelope, go into town as if I were looking for work, and then look for an opportunity to offer the magazines and discuss the Bible." In 1986, many of our brothers and interested ones were put in prison, even those who had just started to study the Bible. The brothers and even the new ones stood firm in an amazing way. Meanwhile, witnesses in many countries wrote to the president of Rwanda to protest the unjust treatment, and the news on the radio reported that he had received hundreds of letters every day. This brought about good results, so that the following year our brothers and sisters and interested people were released by a presidential decree. We were filled with joy. As soon as they were released, the elders organized a baptism in Kigali, where 36 were baptized, and 34 of them enrolled immediately as auxiliary pioneers. At the height of the persecution in 1986, there was an average of 435 publishers reporting. Of these, about 140 brothers and sisters had been imprisoned. These witnesses formed the backbone of Jehovah's organization in Rwanda. Their faith was of attested quality. Finally, after the turbulent years of the 1980s, the congregations in Rwanda entered into a period of relative peace and growth. But what would the future bring? More embraced the truth. Would the new ones also prove to be disciples built with fire-resistant materials? Would their faith be able to withstand the trials that lay ahead? Only time would tell.